This conference is being recorded.
This is Don Hussig, and you're listening to Loving the Earth Pollution Free Radio. Dr. Kevin Timoney is an environmental scientist with Treeline Ecological Research based out of Sherwood Park, Alberta, Canada. Good afternoon, Kevin. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Tar sands oil production uses tremendous volumes of water. Tell us about Alberta water and tar sands.
Well, where to begin? It's a fairly complex issue. There are basically two kinds of bitumen extraction that is happening in Alberta and in Western Canada and Saskatchewan to just starting. First of all, there's the surface mining or strip mining of the shallow deposits, and then there's what is known as in situ bitumen extraction that they use for the deeper deposits. Now, when we're talking about surface mining, we can say without a doubt that it requires a lot of water. But before we even get to that point, we need to understand that in northeastern Alberta, there is a decades-long decline in water availability, and that's been driven primarily by climate change. So we have a growing industry in an area where, due to climate change, the lower Athabasca annual discharge has declined about 30% in the last 50 years or so. Now, when we look at how much water the industry is using from the lower Athabasca River, it's as of 2005, which is the most recent estimate, they're using about 184 million cubic meters per year. And under a medium growth scenario that came out by 2010, they're predicted to use about 430 million cubic meters per year from the lower Athabasca watershed. Now, unfortunately, it's not known how much water is required to maintain the ecological integrity of the lower Athabasca. The recommended limit that has come out recently is a withdrawal rate in winter of about 15 cubic meters per second. Now, the problem with that amount of or that volume of water is that we don't know, first of all, if that's safe enough for to protect the ecosystem. But secondly, we have a growing industry that wants more and more water. And thirdly, we have naturally declining discharge in the first place. So, for example, Schindler, based on that understanding, concluded recently that that the projected bitumen extraction will require too much water to sustain the river and the delta of the Athabasca River. So it's a very serious issue. Industry is concerned about it, but insufficiently concerned to really put the brakes on things. Now, the government has recently come out with a water management framework. And they recommend, for example, if the river falls to a certain volume of discharge, that there will be voluntary requests for a reduction in the amount of water that industry is removing. But under the currently approved water withdrawals that we already have, the Athabasca River will be driven into what's known as the red zone for several months each winter during low flow years. So we have a situation that is really, we are in a crisis right now, and it looks like it's only going to get worse.
What's the solution to the crisis?
The solution to the crisis is, that's a large question in a few words. Clearly, we have to, as a society, cut down on our use of energy. And the world population has to stabilize, but you know these are issues that are bigger than the tar sands themselves. At the regional level or provincial level here in Alberta, we absolutely need to have a meaningful control placed on the amount of water that's being withdrawn from the system. We don't have that. And secondly, we need to actually have an enforcement of our environmental laws, which we currently do not have. Otherwise, this will just continue to get worse. We have contamination of the Athabasca River. We have too much water being taken out of the Athabasca River. We have declines in public health and in ecosystem health. And unless the government actually needs to change in Alberta before we can really hope to have any sort of progress here.
I see. The hamlet of Fort Chipewyan is downstream from the strip mining and tailing ponds on the Athabasca River. What tar sands carcinogens have you found in the Athabasca?
There are many contaminants in the air and in the water and in the sediment and in the wildlife. So we're not just talking about carcinogens, but a variety of compounds that are that lead to declines in health. When we're looking at the water and sediment, we're primarily concerned with things like mercury, arsenic, ammonia, aluminum, antimony, other metals such as copper, lead, strontium, uranium, zinc. I mean, there's lots and lots of compounds that are quite often in high concentration, both in the water and in the sediment. In the air, there's large volumes of particulate matter, sulfur dioxide, and hydrogen sulfide, to name a few. Now, I know we're focused on water here, but we have to remember that the air and the water are linked. What's put up into the air will precipitate onto land and into water bodies and eventually make their way into the water system and flow down to the north to Fort Chipewyan and the Peace Athabasca Delta. When we look at the contaminants that are in the local fishes, that's a very good example of significant health risks. We know that, for example, mercury concentrations in fishes in the lower Athabasca River in walleye, which is one of the primary fishes that people eat, have increased over the last 30 years, and they are now, even the mean levels of mercury are far above what is considered safe to eat for traditional users, that is, those people who eat a lot of fish. But the problem of contamination with mercury and arsenic and other compounds is not just limited to the walleye. It's also been well documented in lake whitefish, sucker, goldeye, northern pike, burbot, and lake trout. So most of the fishes that are eaten by people in the lower Athabasca River are contain significant amounts of contaminants. Now, if we look at the amount of mercury and arsenic in the fishes, it's a serious concern, but it actually gets more concerning once we look at other contaminants such as PAHs, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are elevated by the mining operations. When people are exposed to both arsenic and to PAHs at the same time, that's called co-exposure, the rates of genotoxicity, that is harm to your genes, which can lead to cancer, are elevated many-fold. So a recent set of studies looked at co-exposure to arsenic and PAHs, and they found that the rates of genotoxicity were raised by anywhere from 8 to 18 times. So we have, you know, a complex suite of contaminants that are in the system to which the people and the wildlife are exposed. Now, if we look at incidences of disease downstream, even before we turn to the subject of cancer, it's been documented that the people in Fort Chipewyan have elevated incidences of type 2 diabetes, lupus, renal failure, and hypertension. And we know from other studies that with arsenic exposure, there is an elevated risk of human bile duct, liver, lung, urinary tract, and skin cancers, vascular diseases, and type 2 diabetes. So there's a fairly clear link between the exposure to various contaminants that are in the system and the human health downriver.
Can you tell me anything about, say, how much lead is in, you know, the water and the fish? Is the lead accumulating to the extent that the arsenic and the PAHs are there?
That has not been studied sufficiently, so I can't really comment on that. There certainly are times and places where the lead concentration is above what is considered safe, but it hasn't been studied in terms of human consumption.
Okay, we're certainly focusing, our organization being this cancer group, we're focusing on places and people that are involved with exposure to the PAHs, the lead, the arsenic, and then these other fluid carcinogens. A rare cancer is not rare among the people living in Fort Chipewyan, as you had mentioned, this bile duct cancer. Please describe the cancer situation in this community.
Again, this is one of those very complex situations, so I'll try to be fairly brief. If we look at what the cancer statistics tell us, and we look at the most recent period that's been studied, that was 1995 to 2006, the cancer statistician that did the work concluded that the overall rate of cancer in Fort Chipewyan was 30% above what is expected by random expectation. And for individual types of cancer, such as bile duct cancers, cancers of the blood and lymphatic system, leukemia, and soft tissue sarcomas, each of those cancer types was also found to be elevated above expectation. Now, the question is, of course, why? Why are these various kinds of cancers, and why are other diseases such as type 2 diabetes and renal failure and hypertension elevated in Fort Chipewyan? And right now, we cannot say that there's a direct causative link between the bitumen industry and these elevated rates of disease in Fort Chipewyan, but that is what the evidence is causing us to consider as a plausible explanation, and certainly needs more investigation than is currently received.
Is this greater amount of investigation likely to begin taking place in the near future?
There have been many promises made over the years by various representatives from government, but there's really no study that's going to appear anytime soon. I think what will be required is for the local people to have considerably more control over what is studied and sort of the terms of reference for these studies before anything substantive will arise, because you have to understand that there are billions of dollars of profit at stake here for government and industry, and billions of dollars of liability. So there's a tremendous reluctance on the part of many to dig into this issue of industry and its link with cancer to any degree.
Sounds like something we're familiar with here in the U.S. as well. There seems to be this great reluctance of government to deal with pollution and cancer. They just stay away from it because they know business wants to stay away from it. And we begin to, you know, just look at this as government by corporations rather than government by the people. It's very frustrating.
Yes.
Cancer Action New York and the Cancer Action Network are Stop Tar Sands groups. What are people doing to stop the tar sands in northern Alberta?
They're doing quite a few things. They're appealing to various levels of government, and thus far without much success. They're holding rallies, they're posting information on websites, they're taking part in documentaries. They have brought their case before the United Nations. There's some cases before the courts now. They've spoken with industry and investors. They hold conferences, and they have been supporting various scientific studies. So they're active on many different fronts. But again, it's a David and Goliath issue in terms of who is behind the development and who is benefiting and who is not benefiting. And the people who are opposed to this development are outgunned in all ways of looking at access to media and funds and political power and that sort of thing. So, again, they've been active in many ways, but thus far they have not been able to marshal sufficient support to make a large difference.
Understood. Certainly we're finding that these peak oil, these bottom of the barrel, so to speak, energy sources are not just in one place. I was in Ithaca, New York, central New York, mm-hmm. the Finger Lakes region, just this past mm-hmm. week. And speaking with activists there, they are in the midst of a considerable struggle to stop the Marcellus Shale, the very, very deep gas drilling that is taking place in these counties in central New York around the Finger Lakes. And they are very interested in this peak oil, these more environmentally damaging ways of providing ourselves with energy. And so, you know, with their background, it was very exciting to show them the documentary Downstream that you mm-hmm. figured in very, very, very large role in that. And it was very mm-hmm. impressive to them. They were, you know, captivated with the magnitude of the struggle that's taking place there. And I was making this point that they have to win down there against the gas drilling, because it'll set this wonderful example that this bigger battle can be won with tar sands. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's you know, that whole issue of these unconventional sources of energy is becoming a greater issue by the day worldwide. And so, you know, there's coal bed methane, there's in situ types of bitumen extraction, there's you know, the shale issues. So we have you know, it's various people all over the world are going to have to face this. This new wave of development that will threaten their health and the health of the groundwater and surface water and everything involved in dependent on that water.
Well, it's truly going to be a great test of our will and our commitment to, you know, having a clean water and clean air kind of environment. And I'm really hoping that people will be strong enough to say no to some of these things.
Yeah, I think right now in the United States, you know, there's some reason to be hopeful with the new federal administration. Certainly, there wasn't a lot of hope with the Bush administration. So I can only be more hopeful, but I have to say to date I've been disappointed with what the U.S. government has managed to do in terms of decreasing reliance on these bitumen sources from Canada. I'm worried that they're simply just going to take the easy way out and maintain the status quo.
Yep, that's something that comes to mind when we think about mm-hmm. government in general and these days mm-hmm. in particular. And it's a kind of a threatening kind of situation. And I'm just hoping that with the good work that you're doing and the good work that the filmmakers and the writers like Andrew Nicky Farouk doing his, you know, great now Tar Sands book. And mm-hmm. there are some really good groups around, the Polaris Institute with their Stop Tar Sands campaign, the Pembina Institute. You know, there are really a lot of good Canadians that are working hard on this, and I'm certain that Americans are going to get more and more involved as they learn about dirty oil.
Yes, I think, you know, the American involvement will be crucial, obviously. And as more and more Americans are exposed to unconventional oil-type approaches, especially in Western Canada or Western United States, I think there will probably be a groundswell of support and activity from United States, you know, the populace, to make some wise choices. Because certainly the choices of recent years have not been wise.
Well, I very much appreciate your willingness to, you know, give us part of your working day here to deal with this activism that we're trying to accomplish. And I'm just hoping that, you know, this is all going to turn out great and we'll be, you know, make friends and learn to love the earth better and just have a better time here amongst all of ourselves. Thank you, Dr. Timney.
Thank you. Yes, you're welcome very much, and it was fun. And I wish you the best of luck, and it's not an easy job set before you, but it's one that has to be done.
Thanks a lot, and have a nice afternoon.
Okay, you
Bye.
Too. Bye-bye.